Okay, I'm here. You could all hear me, right?
We can hear you, Marsh.
Okay. So reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, text 36, verse 20. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Pratiyate tu devarshu kamsa abhyasha keshinam. Pasheyam asahantyetam bhavata rama keshavau. After Narada left, King Kamsa summoned Keshi and ordered him, go kill Rama and Krishna. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Taksur Udmalitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sa Padantikam Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhu vayevacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivas Adi Gaur Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. So greetings from New Jersey, and it's such a pleasure to hear the Bhagavatam, and especially the parts about Krishna's pastimes. It's not only Krishna's past, what does Krishna's pastimes mean? It means the exchange of love with his devotees. So it actually, in a very absorbing way, is describing the very thing that we want. We all want happiness, and happiness is a heart filled with devotion. One time I was walking in the gardens of Vrindavan, I think, many of you people here have been with me there near the Krishna Balaram Mandir, and after the floods, thousands of acres, hundreds of acres of flower gardens. And I met one farm, Mali, a gardener. And after the floods, it was a hardship for a lot of the Malis, the gardeners, because a lot of their gardens were washed away. Just like it's maybe a hardship now because their business is they grow the flowers and then they make garlands. That's what they do, and hundreds of garlands. And the different Malis, there must be, you know, so many of them, gardeners. Then they sit in front of the temple and sell the garlands, but now the temples are closed. Therefore, I arranged a donation for one of my friends who's one of those gardeners. Jamuna Jaya, you send me a email. They actually sent me a video of when the Mali received the donation, given by, I believe, you and Isabel and Tiffany. So do that. So he started to talk to I was with Leela Velasini, and she speaks the, not just Hindi, but this is the local dialect called Brijabas. And I told this story before, and he was talking on and on. And I said, well, Leela, what's he saying? Well, he's complaining, you know. he's going to lose 200,000 rupees this year, and he has dowries for his daughters, and he can. But as he was complaining, his eyes were sparkling. You know, it was like a happiness, but he was complaining. So I asked Leela, I said, ask him, how can he be so happy? And I think I've told this story before. And he gave this wonderful thing that's almost a mantra for our existence. He said that happiness is a heart filled with devotion. What else can it be? What else is happiness but fulfilling relationships? And what can be more fulfilling relationship than have love for everything, which is called love of God? In the Narada Bhakti Sutras, it says, Twasmin Parama Prema Rup. To him, Parama Prema Rup, Rupa, the form, Parama Prema, of the highest love is to God. Because it's an eternal relationship. So that's the ultimate goal of life. It's not connected from healthy relationships that we have in this world. And without healthy relationships we have in this world, it can detach us from this world and make us want to seek the eternal relationship, but it could also hinder us from actually having understanding of what the goal is. To have those type of relationships. That has to be the goal. Therefore, one of the main tenets of Krishna consciousness is prema pumartha mahan. Maha, the great, artha, the greatest wealth or goal, is that love, and that love is called prema. So we hear these stories so that we can hear about that love and to hear about the object of that love, which is God, who is Krishna, who is all attractive. And therefore, aspire for them. And the ultimate reality is a drama. This presents that drama in a way that you can be moved by it. And what happens when you get moved by a drama? You have a particular emotion that the drama is actually presenting. Well, this is bhakti ras. This is the drama, the real, ultimate, original drama that presents the overwhelming, rasa means an emotion that consumes us, the emotion that consumes us of love. These people are overwhelmed with love. And therefore, by hearing it, it has the effect of moving us and giving us that experience and giving us that aspiration. At the same time, it's couched in the proper philosophical understanding. Because if you don't have the proper understanding, you're not going to have the proper love. If you think that I am God, you're not going to love God. If you think that God is material, you're not going to love God. And if you think that I am the enjoyer and controller, you're not going to love God. So Krishna consciousness is such a perfect philosophy. It presents the tattva, the philosophical understanding that allows us to hear these pastimes without misconception. Because we filter what we hear also through our intellect. And if our intellect is perverted or not pure, what we hear will also be skewed or changed so that we won't actually be hearing reality. Reality will be spoken, but we may not hear it. Even when I give class, you know, I have the objective to speak the truth. But as much as I have the objective to speak the truth, I have the objective that truth will be understood from when I speak. And it's not the same thing. There are people that can speak the truth, but they can't communicate it. Therefore, when the Bhagavatam was initially spoken, and the sages of Namasharanya, this was after the Bhagavatam was spoken, they were congregated because they knew that this age of Kali was coming, their Trikalagya. They can see the future, so they're trying to figure out what to do. And they anoint Suta Goswami as the Acharya, and they ask him various questions about what to do. And the last question they ask, now that Krishna has left the planet, where will knowledge, jnana, and religion, dharma, be maintained? And Suta Goswami, when he got that question, he answered, he said, it will be the Bhagavatam, which is as brilliant as the sun. And he said, and I was there, yata matam, yata mati, yata ditam. I was there, I heard it, and I realized it. And what does realization mean? It means a depth of understanding that allows you to communicate something. I think people have heard me speak this point before, maybe some. That if you don't have realization, what you do is you get a truth and you understand it perhaps, or you understand it to some degree, but then you have to communicate in a different language. And it doesn't mean like English, and then, you know, you got to go to Spanish or French to German. The different languages, the language that you speak, if it's English, Spanish, French, Hindi, whatever it is, over time, the usage and understanding of words are changed. Because words are impregnated with the history of their use. And throughout cultures, they become used in different ways according to the culture. So someone who's communicating, what he has to do is he has to take the truth that he's heard and communicate it, which means perhaps change its form a bit. And if realization is not there, one will keep it in the same form that he's heard it, even though people no longer understand the message from that, or in the process of communicating it and trying to reform the message, lose the essence. But what realization means, it means a depth of understanding where one can reformat the message, the form of it, without losing the essence. And that's called realization. So we have to have realization. We have to hear it properly. Therefore, we have to understand the philosophy. And therefore, there is tattva and there's rasa. There's the philosophy and there's the relationships that are explained. And that's why Krishna's pastimes are in the 10th canto, so that the tattva can be explained, so that we hear it without misconception, so that when that truth is spoken, that there's a supreme personality of Godhead, and that the goal of life is to love God, we'll actually hear that message. We'll actually hear and understand the reality and the depth of that message. And that was Prabhupada's expertise. I remember after Prabhupada passed away, 11 days after, they had a function and I was there. And in an Indian function, there's always honor given to there must be someone who presides, and he's usually the senior most person. So one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, who was a senior most person, who actually went to the West before Prabhupada and became praised, or he was glorified for that. And he brought back a few people, a few German people. And, oh, wow. And then Prabhupada, who wasn't a sannyasi, who was just a person living on the outside doing his business, then renounces family life and then becomes this great acharya and just brings the whole world back to India. It must have been difficult for him, because when he got up there, he said, I could have done what Swamiji had done, but I didn't have the mentality to preach to the hippies. So he's actually trying to insult Prabhupada, but actually it's the greatest glorification. Because what is the mentality to preach to the hippies? It's a depth of realization that you can take a tradition couched in a particular culture and come to a place without any culture and communicate that Krishna is God. I remember there's a beautiful film of Prabhupada in the garden in LA, and they brought so many professors to see him. And Prabhupada just said, Krishna is God, why won't you accept? With such conviction. So that's just a little introduction and my own enthusiasm to hear this story. And it's such an important story because it's about a person who spent his life in hope of seeing God. And God heard that hope in his heart. And that's what spiritual life is. It's the hope in our heart. It's the desire in our heart. And the understanding that the connection with God is so great that it's worth any price to pay for it. And when you have that type of hope in the heart, and you cultivate that over your life, whatever your situation is, whatever your, because it doesn't mean sannyas. It's not bhakti. Bhakti is dedication, not renunciation. So when you cultivate that, and you follow the process to actually develop that, the main thing is to serve the devotees of God. When you develop that hope, and that's what he did. He did those two things. He served Krishna's father, and he spent his life and took all risks to see God. And Krishna hears the heart. God hears the heart. That's how all of us that are here today in this class, this is why you're here. Because somehow or other, maybe in the past life, you had some desire that there must be something higher than myself in the center is the goal of life. There must be something higher than my opinions. There must be something higher from my desires. And then this little space in the cloud of ignorance, false ego, the desire for superiority, the desire for enjoyment, the desire for control, the desire to be the center. Since time immemorial, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev, since time immemorial, and then that cloud opens by the utter frustration we have by trying to live a life in any other way than full dedication and service to God within whatever condition we're in, without neglecting our duties and responsibilities, which is part of God's will. For those who are embodied, those who are conditioned. And when he saw that, then he arranged that we come closer to him by getting the association of saintly people and sadhus, we say. And so that's what the basic story is. And basically what happened is that there was a very demoniac ruler. He was extremely powerful. And he was situated in Mathura. And he was so oppressive, everybody fled, or anybody who was a leader fled, because demoniac leaders don't want anybody who are intelligent. So the first thing they do is they try to destroy the intellectual and administrative class that opposes them. But he stayed because Mathura was near Vrindavan. And he had to convince, because he was very intelligent. He was super intelligent. He had to convince this, his name was Akrur. He had to convince this ruler that he was his well-wisher. And the ruler was desperate to have good ministers. And this person stayed. So he stayed. And he stayed and he served Krishna's father, who was in Mathura, by protecting him from the influence of this demoniac king, who knew, who was told by an Akashvani, an unembodied voice in the sky, that the eighth child of his sister would be his death. And his sister was married to this Vasudev, and the eighth child would be Krishna. So he imprisoned them. At any moment, he could have killed them. But somehow, Akrura looked after him. So he waited so patiently. And then, after so many years, now we're at the part of the story. He's waited for 12 years patiently. It's worth waiting for. And we're at the part of the story where Narada Muni, the transcendental spaceman, somehow, he's another person that somehow or other Kamsa respects, because there's a culture of respecting kind of sadhus or something. And the demons, they don't mind someone who's saintly, but they just don't want them to have a personal conception of God. So Narada came, and his goal is to expedite the killing of Kamsa, this demon. And then he wants to expedite it, is he wants to Krishna to come from Vrindavan to Mathura. So he comes and he shows up, and Krishna had just killed another demon. Now Narada had informed Kamsa before that it's not just the eighth child, because there's a fight always between the demons and the devotees, the asuras and the asuras. And it even plays out in the world in different ways. If you stir the things, you kind of see where it is. So he's trying to expedite the appearance of Krishna, and he had told him previously that it could be any child, not the eighth child. Not only could it be any child, but then he told him it could be anywhere. The demigods are just taking birth for a revolution, taking birth to kill you. So Kamsa was very paranoid. He actually didn't trust anyone, which, and this is why Akru was so dear to him, because Akru is extremely intelligent and diplomatic. And when you're diplomatic, you understand how a person's mind thinks. And if you want him to think a particular way, you know what reality to feed them and what things to say to move it. I was reading something, I forgot where, I don't know, in China or something, you know, that if you know, you repeat a lie enough, the common people could just buy it. But anyway, he was very, very expert. And then Kamsa thought that this Akrura, at least this Akrura, he's really kind of my well-wisher. So he trusted him a lot. So Narada, so Kamsa was just sending his demons, and they take different disguises into various places just to search out people that were born at a particular time and kill them because they could be. And somehow every time it was Krishna that would kill the demon. But he didn't know that Krishna was that eighth child. He just knows that someone was killing these demons. And he kept on selling demons. So the last demon he sent was this ferocious bull demon, who was desecrating the places of sacrifice, et cetera. And then Krishna killed this demon. And that's a long story, but it has to do with the appearance of Radha-kund. So Narada shows up at that time, and he reveals to Kamsa, he said, you know, you've been sending those demons in, but you know who that Krishna is? He is the eighth child that Kamsa said. He wasn't born of Devaki, because when Devaki, the eighth child, was a daughter. And it happened to be Durga, or Maya Devi personified, the material energy personified, and then it had the power to escape and you know, whatever. He said, no, you don't understand. Krishna's father, when Krishna was born, he took them over to Mathura. At that time, Mother Yasoda was giving birth to a daughter, and she was so exhausted from childbirth that he put the daughter down. He put his son down and took the daughter back. So he went to protect his son. Now, there's very many esoteric points which are beyond the story, but actually Krishna was born to Yasoda and this Krishna merged. It's a whole story. But anyway, it was like this. And then Kamsa becomes absolutely furious that Vasudev cheated him, because why is Vasudev alive? If we know the story, Kamsa was taking his sister on a wedding procession. He was driving the chariot, and his sister Devaki was sitting there, and the husband Vasudev was sitting there. And then that Akashvani, that unembodied voice, "You fool, Kamsa! You're carrying, you know, the woman whose eighth child will kill you." And that's what false ego means. False ego means our strongest desire is to enjoy and control. And it's a stronger desire than even family, when it becomes intensified to a level of demoniac mentality. So he was about to kill her. We know the story. And the only way that Vasudev, who is so brilliant, could save his wife is tell Kamsa, you know, he tried so many things which were very powerful, but then he just told, I'll just bring the children to you. And because there was such a culture of integrity, if you read the ancient scriptures like the Mahabharata, the main thing is people's honesty. Because if you have a culture where you're trained to meet your words, you can discipline yourself and follow everything just by saying it. And when I grew up in India, that means I came there 44 years ago. And I would meet men from these culture, what to speak about. I was meeting men from my grandfather's culture. I was meeting people that were older when India still had the remnants of this culture, what to speak. Their words were like the lines on a stone. They don't change by expedience, by convenience. There's very, very few people like that today. When the Sudra was beating the bull and the bull was shaking on one leg, the four legs of religion, the last thing standing was truthfulness, and it's shaky. That level of honesty, I will die rather than lie. And it's such a samskara. I knew people like that, that said things and kept it their whole life, even if it was so difficult. And what to speak of Vasudev. So when Vasudev gave his word, Kamsa said, okay, that's a deal. Just bring the children. And then he brought the children. And then he said, no, you know, I can see it's the eighth child. And again, now Narada is saintly, but he's stirring this all up because he wants Krishna and his brother Balaram to come and kill Kamsa. He's actually doing it, Narada, for the protection of Krishna's parents who've been persecuted by Kamsa, been thrown in jail, locked in chains. So then he tells him, well, that's what happened. And so these two boys, and Balaram was the seventh child. He was also, there was some arrangement where he was transferred to the womb of Rohini, another wife of Vasudev. And Kamsa was absolutely furious. And I think there's a strong point here that I think we should all embody. Anger covers intelligence. Kamsa does stupid things. Because Krishna is predicted to be the person that will kill him. And then after Narada tells this to Kamsa, then, because he's so smart, he says, okay, I got him riled up, but I don't want to get him angered to the degree that he could kill Vasudev. One second. Raghunath, my class will be over about 12 o'clock, okay? If you're free. Okay. So don't kill Vasudev. You know, Vasudev is not the one that's going to kill you. You won't get any benefit from killing Vasudev. And if you kill him, then how do you think that Nanda Maharaja is going to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura? He'll run away in the forest. And because Krishna goes out to the forest every day with the cows, you'll never be able to find him. And anyway, any demon you sent was killed by Krishna. You have to bring him to Mathura. I don't know if this translates in other languages, but in English is where you have the home field advantage. like the crocodile in the water who can defeat the elephant. There's one story with Lord Shiva where Garuda comes and he sees Lord Shiva and there's snakes crawling about Lord Shiva's body. So Garuda eats snakes. He's the carrier of Vishnu. He eats snakes. And he's the arch enemy of the snake. So this little snake starts to go like this and hiss. And then Garuda is thinking, yeah, I kill that snake. But he thinks he's so powerful because he's on the body of Lord Shiva. So I can't do anything. So the little snake had the home. He said, well, the biggest snakes, the kings of the snakes are afraid of me, but this little snake, because he had the home field advantage. It's also a very important philosophical point. Your strength does not come individually. Your strength comes by the lineage you're in. Your strength comes from the power of the group that is connected with you. But how foolish. This is death personified. Let him run away to the forest. Bring him here. You bring him here to Mathura, death personified, and he's already killed all those demons. But the rage, that anger covers. So I gave a long introduction, but I hope there was some new points. And we can go quickly for some verses today. After Narada left, King Kamsa summoned Keshi and ordered him, go kill Rama and Krishna. So again, Krishna's killed so many demons, abhuta kamana, and in such wonderful ways, he doesn't even use weapons. He killed Putana, the demon, by his lips. He killed Keshi. He killed the bull by taking out his horns. He killed Dainakatsura by whirling him around. Abhuta Kamana. It's so wonderful. His incredible powers. And he's your death personified in your bringing, but Kamsa. First of all, he can't accept that Krishna is God. He just thinks he's empowered by some demigods like this. And so now he sends another demon to disguise as a horse. And here it says, interesting, you'll see with Kamsa that got the words. There's several words that indicate that a person at this level is extremely cunning and knows how to control people. Just like diplomats, this is the demoniac diplomat. That's why they say politicians, but these are really expert people. So he knows. So he wants to enthuse his people, and a lot of times I remember just someone recently wrote me for a donation. And they wrote, so how are you? We miss you. We miss you. And then halfway in, they says, now that we've buttered you up, can you help us out? And I will, actually, because it's a good charity. But go kill him. He's trying to bring him here at the same time he's sending someone to kill him. So the king of the Bhojas next called for his ministers, headed by Mushtika, Chunura, Shala, and Toshala, and also for his elephant keepers. The king addressed them as follows. So Narada was also, Narada is very determined. It's not that it seems like he's arranging for Krishna's death, but he knows that Krishna will actually kill Kamsa. So he's trying to enthuse Kamsa, and he's giving him advice because how to get Krishna and Balaram there. So he said, you know, these are kind of village people, and Mathura is a big city. So have a big festival. And today is Ekadasi, but in 3 days there's something with Lord Shiva, and have some big sacrifice and make a big stadium and have a sports event, a wrestling arena. So now he's the king of the Bhojas, Bhojarat, the king of the Bhojas, which is also interesting. See, because Kamsa, what's the dynasty? I think it's Ugrasena. Anyway, he's an illegitimate child. So who he thought his father wasn't his father. And he finds this out, so he no longer identifies with that dynasty. In fact, it angers him, even threw his father in jail. So he starts calling his ministers. And he calls for these wrestlers because he has plans. And what you'll see, because it's going to give you some insight into the material mentality that we also have. Because he says, okay, send Keshi. And he said Keshi. And if that doesn't work, I'll have the elephant Kuvalayapida. Kuva means everywhere. Pida means head. It's an elephant has a huge head. This has the biggest elephant possible. And we'll have the elephant at the gate. What I'll do is, so no one will think that I've arranged this. I'll make a very small entrance that the elephant can't come in. I'll come in at that elephant, and then I'll dismount and go in and sit at my seat where I can see that. Then the elephant will be blocking the gate, and then when Krishna comes, he'll be antagonized, and when he tries to antagonize the elephant will kill him. But anyway, if the elephant doesn't kill him, then I have these strong wrestlers will kill him. And then if these strong wrestlers don't kill him, then I'll kill him myself. And then if the people in the audience become upset and want to take revenge because all of Krishna's family was there, while they're so shocked that I'll kill Krishna, I'll immediately kill them. And it's the mentality that I can control, and your plans can only go to a certain limit, and you have to be detached because there's so many factors beyond your control. Where there's a certain aspect where, okay, I make this decision. And as I keep on planning, I leave it a bit open because I'm not the controller. But the demoniac, I'm going to control and do this and do this and do that. And our minds are like this, and then this will happen. And then, no, what does Krishna want from me? Let me make my decision. Let's see how things unfold. I can't plan too far. I make good plans. But it's far, but with the factor that Krishna is in control. I'll make all my plans. When the factor that Krishna is in control, there may be a limit to how far I'll do this. But then also Vasudeva understood my dear heroic Chanura and Mushtika, please hear this. Ram and Krishna, the sons of Anakadundabi Vasudeva, are living in Nanda's cowherd village. It has been predicted that these two boys will be the cause of my death. When they are brought here, kill them on the pretext of engaging them in a wrestling match. So actually, it's very interesting. The Sanskrit has so many deep meanings. When he addresses Krishna's father, Vasudeva, he calls him Anaka Dundabi. This is several times used. Anaka Dundabi. Anaka is a trumpet and Dundabi is a kettle drum. It may be the other way around. So they're instruments that create a very, like, they indicate glory, you know. They create this kind of glory. And the demigods play these instruments. There's a planet called Vidyadharas. It's the planet of the drummers. And there's incredible musicians. And when there's something that's glorious coming, especially in relation to God, they want to make sounds of glory. So when Krishna's father was born, everybody was surprised. They heard from the heavens, rum, dum, boom, boom. They heard these instruments, Anaka Dundabi, and they called them Anaka Dundabi. And it indicates a great personality. A personality would have the quality of Ashabanda. It's one of the qualities of Bhava Bhakti. Ashabanda means your hope cannot be bound. You're so determined. That's a great personality. Your hope cannot be bound. And specifically in relationship to a devotee, it's not ego, because the hope, while your hope cannot be bound, is because you're serving God and God is merciful. So he's the ultimate controller and I'm under his control. And one of the symptoms of faith is that Krishna is the protector. And what that means is he'll always do what's best. The devotee is fearless. Just like Prabhupada's name was Abhoy Charan. That's his name his father gave him. One who is fearful, who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Prabhupada was a boy. He was fearless. He came to America alone. He had faith in Krishna. He didn't have faith that I'm so big I can do something. When he arrived in America and he saw the force of material civilization and his mission to actually challenge it, he said, I'm an insignificant beggar. What can I do? And then he said to Krishna, make me dance, make me dance, make me dance. It's your power. And then he started to quote the Bhagavatam, how the force of Krishna's teachings can purify the heart. So now you get these sons. These boys predicted my death, bring him here, I'll kill it. But there was the voice from the sky. Don't be such a fool, Kamsa. And Kamsa, he used Anaka. Why did he use Anaka Dundabi? Because even though he was upset with Vasudev for kind of cheating him this way, he said, my God, I don't think he said hell, but I'll say it. How the hell did he get out of the prison? What a plan. Somehow he crossed the river and he switched the children and he's not an ordinary person. He's not an ordinary person. Oh. 24. Erect a wrestling ring with many surrounding viewing stands and bring all the residents of the city and the outlying districts to see the open competition. This was Narada's thing. Because he didn't want people to suspect what he's doing. He wanted to be very subtle about it. You know, when you're a leader, even if you're a dictator, you're very, very careful when you use your powers, a lot of times they don't bother religious groups when they're very, very small. But as soon as they get over a certain number, why? Because why antagonize those people? They give them a little something here and there. It's Rajniti. It's the rules of the king. It just looked for like a festival for the pleasure of the king. And then a festive atmosphere. And then, of course, you, elephant keeper, my good man, should position the elephant Kuvalayapia at the entrance to the wrestling arena and have him kill my two enemies. So that was his plan. I explained that. He said, Bhadra, my good man. I remember this, Tamal Krishna Maharaj passed away, but he was a friend of mine and he was Prabhupada's secretary. And there's a reason he was Prabhupada's secretary, because he was very powerful and very expert. I remember that the evening that Prabhupada passed away, I walked outside of Prabhupada's room and he said, you know, I need someone to clean the whole floor with eucalyptus oil. Can you help? I said, yeah. He said, a good man. I was okay. Yeah. Okay. We have a little time for people to, if they have any reflections. So I'm pretty excited. I did this story 2 years ago. I'm doing it again. When I finish this, I may do Brihat Bhagavatamrita, maybe some chapters, the story of Gop Kumar, which is Brihat Bhagavatamrita, the nectar of the great Bhagavad, wonderful story. Okay, anybody like to say some reflection?
Haribol Maharaj.
Jamuna Jaya, Haribol.
Thank you. I have so many reflections. This is really so powerful. But I was thinking about what you said about that when a person of truthfulness speaks, it's like they're what they say is like a carved into stone. And isn't it interesting? I was thinking that Akura seemingly was lying because he was like going along with Kamsa, but really he was living the truth because in his heart, Krishna left his heart. So externally it looked like he was, you know, because he was a spy sort of like lying, but internally he was carving that line in the stone because he was only living the truthfulness of Krishna. I love that.
You see, the highest principle is not satya, it's ahimsa. That's why ahimsa is the first yama. It's like an elephant footprint. Everything else fits within the elephant's footprint. So all of the principles have to fit in nonviolence. So for example, you're in Nazi Germany and I heard this story of this one nun, you know, she hid like 80 Jewish children as if they were part of her orphanage or school. Now, and a lot of times the children had to hide underneath something or something. Now, what if the Nazis came and said, well, you know, where are the kids? And they said, well, you know, I read about George Washington, the American president, you know, when he chopped down the cherry tree. This is our culture in America. And his father said, who did it? And he said, I did it. And that was our president because he had so much integrity. So he said, I've read about that. And they're down there. No. Ahimsa. You violated ahimsa. So there is satya. And satya comes up to the limit of ahimsa. If your truth will cause some violence, then the higher principle is to lie. Okay. Thank you, Jamuna Jaya. Okay. Anybody else like to say something?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Gloria. And, yes.
I think I should keep thinking about something you said about how we need to get the proper understanding to be able to love God.
A basic proper understanding, not to be a scholar, but the basic points. If you have a conception that I am God, what's the question of loving God? Or you think God is material, Mayavadi philosophy. God is just a product of matter, and I just worship God till I get under the get free of the illusion that there's distinctions. It's certainly not that one has to be a scholar, but one has to have what's called sambandhagyan, basic philosophical understanding of three points. I'm not the enjoyer and controller. I'm not God, and God is not material. And those points can be given in, you know, solidified in many, many ways. And that's what Prabhupada gave in his books. He really wanted to make sure that people have, and that's the basic knowledge. It's just like, if you want a treasure, you have to first know where the treasure is, mm-hmm. right? Then the means to extricate it and understanding the value of what you're getting. But it's understood, if you've got that basic understanding that this is God, this is the goal of life, then the other things of practicing it and understanding the value of it will come. Therefore, this is called Siddho Pradesh, instructions that lead to perfection. So you have to have that basic understanding. And when people, you know, go to yoga things where they get confused and sentimental understanding and all these type of things, then, you know, it affects it. It affects it. So we have to have a basic understanding.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you,
Matt. Hey, Bo, thank you. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, if anybody wants to say hello.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hare Krishna Maharaj.
My two thank favorites. You You're here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the beautiful
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is Sevanandi.
Oh, Sevanandi's here too. Okay, great.
Yes, thank you.
All the people from my favorite country.
Oh, thank you very much.
Krishna Maharaj. It's Gala.
Where's Gala?
Here.
I hear you.
You don't see me?
Oh, okay. Gala, very nice. Huh? You like to hear Krishna Katha?
Yeah, I loved it. Thank you so much.
Okay, that's great. Great. Good. From my favorite country. Good. Okay.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, Narmasaki here. Thank you for the class.
Okay, great. Great. Who else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. It's
the Brady Bunch. Okay.
And Don Haley, working
okay.
on you.
I'll speak to you at 4. Okay. Okay.
Hello.
Someone else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Hope everything is fine there.
Oh, Catalina. Nice to see you. Thank you. Nice
Thank
that you.
You
could hear. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Guru Dev. It's Lal Govinda.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you for a great class.
See you tomorrow. Okay. Okay. Hare Bo.
Hare Bo.
Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. This is Kishori Radha.
Hey, Hare Bo.
Hare Bo.
Good. Anybody else? Okay. Anyway, I see the list of people, so I get a good idea who the audience is. So. All of the people that have come on, thank you very much. Okay? Okay. Thank you. Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patita Pavanevaishnavaibhyo.